Let's begin today by talking about the growing family of King David. In order to do that, we have to go back to some passages that I said we'd come back to later. 2 Samuel, chapter number 3, verses 2 through 5, list the sons of David born at Hebron. And we know that David was the king of Judah at Hebron for about 7.5 years before he moved his capital to Judah and functioned as the king over all of the tribes of Israel. Now, there's a parallel to this that we will eventually get to in 1 Chronicles chapter number 3. But let's read the one from 2 Samuel 3 first. Verse number 2, it says, "Sons were born to David at Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelitess." Now, this is not Jezreel up in the north. This is Jezreel down in the southeast part of Judah. It's down by Hebron. And this is one of the wives that David married while he was on the run from King Saul in the last 2 years of Saul's kingdom. So probably Ahinoam became pregnant during the last part of David's time spent at Ziklag and gave birth once he had been inaugurated as king at Hebron. So Amnon is the firstborn of King David. Verse number 3 says, "His second was Gileab by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite." Now again, this is Carmel down in the southeast corner of Judah near Hebron. And this is the other woman that David married while he was on the run from Saul. And so she too probably got pregnant during the latter part of the time spent at Ziklag and gave birth shortly after they arrived at Hebron as the new capital for the kingdom of David. And so the second born is this young man named Gileab. In the 1 Chronicles chapter 3 passage, he's called Daniel. It's not unusual for kids to have more than one name, so not surprising there. We know nothing of him in later years, so I suspect he may have died young. Just my guess. All right, the third that was born was Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. Now, Geshur is a country up in the north. It's part of Aram. And it would appear that David married this woman, Maacah, as part of the peace treaty arrangement entered into when David subdued some of those Aramean groups up in the north the first time. And so this is this means that this wife is not Israeli. So keep that in mind. Number 4. And the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. And the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David at Hebron. So you see a list of several wives that David had, which we've talked honestly about before, that this is one of David's weaknesses, that he did not stay strict with God's instructions that kings should not multiply wives to themselves. Wives were typically married as a seal of some treaty or business deal. And so these are the boys that were born at Hebron. And David would have also had some daughters by these same wives, no doubt. One of them we know the name of because she comes up into a story soon, and her name is Tamar. And she is born to Maacah, and she is a full sister to Absalom. And that's going to be a significant part in the next story. Okay, at this point, we have to shift over to 1 Chronicles chapter 3. 1 Chronicles chapter 3, where verses 1 through 4 reproduce what we've just talked about, the six sons born to him while he was reigning at Hebron during a 7.5-year period. Verse number 4 completes it by saying, he reigned 33 years in Jerusalem, so a total of 40 years. And that means this section of Chronicles was written after David was already dead. Verse 5, these were born to him in Jerusalem: Shemaiah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, four by Bathshua, the daughter of Amiel. So Bathshua is just an alternate name for Bathsheba. And we know that her firstborn surviving son is named Solomon. His younger brother that becomes significant is Nathan, because it's through his genetic line that Mary, the mother of Jesus, comes. And you can see that in Luke chapter number 3. And then the other two sons, we don't know very much about them. Some people wonder whether or not one of them might have been the child that died, the unnamed child in the story of Bathsheba and David's adultery. Don't know for sure. But he does have other sons at Jerusalem, and here there's names. Verse 6, then Ibhar, Elishama, Eliphelet, Noga, Nepheg, Yafia, Elshama, Eliada, and Eliphet, nine. All these were David's sons, besides the sons of the concubines, and Tamar was their sister. So David has this growing family at Jerusalem. And in the story we're about to go to, it takes place, I believe, in the year 994 BC, which would have been the 24th year that David was on the throne. So 24 years since he became king at Hebron, which means his oldest boys are in their early 20s. And the other boys range downward from there into their teens and down. And David himself at this time would have been about 54. And we're only about a year and a half, maybe 2 years past David's adulterous affair with Bathsheba and the death of Uriah the Hittite. And Solomon is only a little bitty baby. Let's turn to 2 Samuel chapter 13 now. I think we're ready for the next story. Now, Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. So Absalom must be right around his early 20s, and his sister Tamar can't be much different in her own age, maybe in her upper teens. She's not married, so that might help us understand that she's not reached whatever was the marriageable age of this time period. All right, so after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. Now, Amnon has a different mom than Absalom and Tamar, but he's living in the same palace complex. And he is the oldest of the boys. He must be about 23 or so. And whether he's married or not doesn't really play into the story. He develops an infatuation for his younger half-sister. That's the problem. Verse number 2. Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. So he develops this desire to have a sexual relationship with her. But he can't figure out how to get it done legitimately. And it's driving him into physical illness. That's how off kilter he is with all of this. Verse number 3. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. So this would be one of David's nephews and therefore Amnon's cousin. They're probably close to the same age and have been buddies since youth. That's the guess. Jonadab was a very crafty man, so he's sly. He said to him, "Oh, son of the king, why are you so haggard morning after morning? Will you not tell me?" Amnon said to him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." So, little talk back and forth between the boys. Now, remember, they're probably in their 20s, but they are acting as men who are being led by their hormones more than anything else. So Jonadab said to him, "Well, why don't you lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill? When your father comes to see you, then just say to him, 'Let my sister Tamar come and give me bread to eat and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand.'" So his suggestion is pretend to be gravely ill. When your dad checks on you, which he will, then tell him the only thing that you think will make you feel better is if your sister Tamar could come and cook some food for you and feed it to you by hand. And that will let you be alone with her, and then you can take it from there. So this guy has got a problem in the advice, doesn't he? Verse number 6. So Amnon lay down, and he pretended to be ill. And when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, "Please, let my sister Tamar come and make a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat from her hand." And so David sent home to Tamar and said, "Go to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." Now, the palace complex was probably made up of several different houses. And since Amnon, the oldest son of David, is probably about 23 or so, he's living in his own little residence. So David goes ahead and agrees with Amnon's request and says, "Tamar, go check on your brother at his house. Make some meal for him. Make him feel better." So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house where he was lying down. She took dough and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and baked the cakes. Then she took the pan and emptied it out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, "Send everyone out from me." So everyone went out from him. So he dismisses his household staff so that only he and Tamar are left in the house. That's dangerous already, isn't it? Verse number 10. Then Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber that I may eat from your hand." So bring it into the bedroom because he's laying down in the bedroom. And Tamar took the cakes she'd made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. And I have a feeling that she was already uncomfortable with this situation. And then this happens. Verse 11. When she brought them near him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come, lie with me, my sister." So now he pulls the mask away. "I'm in love with you. Let's make love here on my bed. Let me show you how I feel about you." And this properly sickens her. And she immediately starts trying to look around for ways to get out of the situation in one piece. So she answered him, "No, my brother, do not violate me." Now, the word "violate" that she uses is literally, "Don't humble me. For such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this outrageous thing. As for me, where could I carry my shame? And as for you, you would be as one of the outrageous fools in Israel. Now, therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." Now, that last line tells me that she is focused on the moment right now. She is not saying it would be horribly inappropriate for us to have a relationship. It would be horribly inappropriate for us to have a relationship before being married. Now, from a Jewish law standpoint, the law is very clear on this matter. Near relatives, as in half-brother, half-sisters, are not supposed to get married. But she, in her panic, is trying to do what she can to get him to let go of her and let her move on out of this situation, back to her father's house, back to her mother's house, and then she'll be able to deal with it. So she basically says, "Look, you need to talk to our father and ask him if we can get married. You do that, and that's the proper way." But verse 14, he would not listen to her. And being stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. So he raped her. And then Amnon hated her with very great hatred, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, "Get up, go." So after the act is over, and no doubt she was crying and pleading, after it's all over with, he feels nothing but anger at her reaction toward him, and perhaps some shame over the fact that he's engaged in this horrible crime. A crime which is punishable by death, by the way, under Israeli law. Verse 16. So he tries to tell her, just go away. But she said to him, "No, my brother, for this wrong in sending me away is greater than the other that you did to me." So her response is, "No, this can't be the end of it, because what you did has to be dealt with." But he would not listen to her. And he called the young man who served him and said, "Put this woman out of my presence and bolt the door after her." So he's not pretending to be sick anymore. So he gets up and goes to his front door, calls his number one guy back into the house and says, "Kick this woman out of here and don't let her back in." Verse 18. Now, she was wearing a long robe with sleeves, for thus were the virgin daughters of the king dressed. Apparently, this was the tradition or the custom of the time, that the unmarried daughters of the king would wear these long-sleeved, probably long robes. And then when they got married, it would change into some other style that indicated that they were married. So his servant put her out and bolted the door after her, and Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the long robe that she wore, and she laid her hand on her head and went away, crying aloud as she went. So here we have a rape victim, shamed at what has just happened to her, grieving over it, and doing all the normal things that would happen in this culture regarding grief. She puts stuff on her head, ashes or dirt on her head. She rips her clothing. She puts her hand on her head in shame and runs back to her house. Now, her house is where the princess Ma'aka lives and where her big brother Absalom is living. David doesn't live there because he is married to multiple wives. So he has his own residence. Possibly he's living only with Bathsheba being in close proximity right now to him because that's where his focus is, and little baby Solomon as well. But only Absalom sees her when she comes in from this crime. Verse 20, her brother Absalom said to her, "Has Amnon your brother been with you?" So he immediately suspects what's happened because he knows that she went over there and is coming back from there now all disheveled and crying and upset. He may have been aware that he had this weird infatuation with Tamar the whole time. But immediately, because Amnon is perceived as the heir to the throne, because he's the eldest son, Absalom decides that he can't immediately react to this, that he has to be more circumspect in how he deals with the situation. So he says, "Now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take heart," or "do not take this to heart." Now, those words are not comforting or helpful, are they? Again, we always have to be honest when we deal with the stories that we see, the real stories of life here in Scripture. But he is probably expressing to her his intention to deal with it later in a special way. So Tamar lived a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house. So Absalom is the one that's kind of in control of this household. Now, here comes the really hurtful part. When David heard of all these things, he was very angry. But he doesn't do anything about it. Now, it doesn't say that in the text, but we know it to be the case. Why doesn't he do anything about it? I think in large part it has to do with his own guilt over the fact that he had committed adultery and had killed the husband of his now wife, Bathsheba, or Bathsheba, the mother of his baby Solomon. And he, David, had not been executed for that crime or those crimes. How is it that he could take lethal criminal action against his own son in circumstances like that? And so that's probably what's driving David's non-action. And the moment he chooses not to act, he makes things worse. Because now Absalom is not just simply angry with Amnon. He is also angry with his father. Verse 22, Absalom spoke to Amnon neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. So as I said, all of that probably happened in about 994 BC. And Absalom just bides his time, waits until he thinks that he can find the perfect opportunity to do to his half-brother what his father should have done to him, and that is execute him. So let's set up our story for tomorrow. Verse 23. After 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shearers at Baal Hatzor, which is near Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. So we've talked about how the gathering of the wool, sheep shearing, was a great big festival time. Lots of eating and celebrating and contests. And so he uses this as an opportunity to invite all of his brothers to come and participate, including Amnon. Verse 24, Absalom said to the king, "Behold, your servants have sheep shearers. Please let the king and his servants go with your servant." But the king said to Absalom, "No, my son, let them not all go, lest we be burdensome to you." But he pressed him, but he would not go, but gave him his blessing. So he's trying to get everybody there. And I'm going to just give you my opinion. I think he was planning on murdering his father at the same time. And he doesn't get it done, because David doesn't come. But anyway, verse 26, Absalom said, "Well, if not, please let my brother Amnon go with us," because he's the crown prince, obviously. And the king said, "Why should he go with you?" So David's suspicious. But Absalom pressed him until he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So now, despite David's suspicions, Amnon and all the other sons of David are at the sheep shearing festival of Absalom. And Absalom is going to give instructions to his servants. "When I give the signal, we're going to kill my half-brother Amnon for the rapist that he is." But of course, we'll have to pause on the story until tomorrow when we get back into God's Word.